If you think the current state of artificial intelligence is just, typing a clever prompt and getting a magical, flawless result back, well, this deep dive is probably going to shatter that illusion entirely.
Yeah, completely. It's a whole different world now.
Welcome to the show. Today, we are taking a massive stack of sources, market estimates, regional salary data, corporate hiring trends, technical skill matrices, all of it.
Right, there's a ton of data here.
And we are unpacking the real-world value of a very specific, incredibly lucrative career in India right now, the MLOps engineer in 2026.
It's such a fascinating space to look at right now.
It really is. And our mission for you today is pretty simple. We are going to figure out exactly why this role exists, why the compensation is just skyrocketing, and what it actually takes to climb this specific career ladder.
Because, I mean, here in 2026, the AI industry has officially moved out of the playground.
Right, the experimental sandbox era is just dead.
Exactly. We are now dealing with hardcore, mission-critical, real-world production systems. And the sources make that shift incredibly clear.
Yeah, they really do.
We aren't just looking at salary numbers today to see what sounds impressive. We are going to break down the actual mechanics of the tech market.
To understand why a highly specific set of skills commands such a massive premium, right?
Right, because the numbers only make sense when you understand the underlying engineering challenges that these professionals are actually hired to solve.
Okay, let's unpack this because before we can even talk about the money, we have to understand the core function of the job.
Absolutely.
I was thinking about how to visualize this gap between building an AI and actually running one.
Oh, yeah, the race car analogy.
Yes. If a machine learning engineer designs a high-performance race car engine, like the model itself, the MLOps engineer is, well, they're the pit crew, the track engineer, and the mechanic all rolled into one.
Right, making sure that car can actually survive a 200-mile-per-hour race without just exploding on the track.
Exactly. They are deploying it, monitoring it for model drift, maintaining the CI/CD pipelines, and managing the cloud infrastructure.
Because traditional software is static, but machine learning models are dynamic. I mean, they
Yeah.
degrade.
That is a perfect way to put it. You don't want to end up pumping contaminated logic into a multi-million dollar enterprise system.
Yeah, a standard software engineer writes code. And if that code works on a Tuesday, it will almost certainly work the following Tuesday. The logic doesn't just spontaneously change.
Right.
But machine learning models are essentially living artifacts. They are trained on a specific snapshot of historical data.
And then reality hits.
Exactly. The moment you expose that model to live, real-world users, the data distribution shifts. Consumer behavior changes, market conditions fluctuate.
And suddenly, a model that was like 99% accurate in the laboratory is making wildly incorrect predictions in production.
Right. And MLOps is the discipline of catching that degradation before it causes a massive catastrophe.
So let's ground this in the baseline numbers our sources provide for the Indian market in 2026, because the financial valuation of that reliability you just mentioned is
It
striking.
really is.
For freshers, meaning engineers with 0 to 2 years of experience, the baseline sits between 6 and 10 lakhs per annum, or LPA.
Which is a solid start.
Yeah, and then moving into mid-level roles around 2 to 5 years of experience, that band jumps to 12 to 20 LPA.
Okay.
And for senior engineers, those with 5+ years, we are looking at a baseline roughly between 20 and 35 LPA.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the market is aggressively pricing in the cost of downtime.
Right, downtime is expensive.
Exactly. When you look at those senior numbers, companies are paying for peace of mind. An enterprise cannot afford to have its recommendation engine or its pricing algorithm go rogue for 12 hours.
Oh, or its fraud detection system.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't just wait while a data scientist tries to manually figure out what went wrong in a Jupyter notebook somewhere.
Right, that would be a disaster.
Maybe.
So MLOps engineers automate the monitoring and the retraining loops so that the system heals itself.
Or at least alerts the right people the second an anomaly is detected.
But the sources point out something fascinating about those senior numbers. A standard senior MLOps engineer caps out around that 35 LPA mark.
Right, the baseline ceiling.
Yeah, but specialized or lead-level roles are hitting 60 LPA, and in some cases, blowing well past that.
It's a huge jump.
It really is. Compensation essentially doubles for the elite tier. So, what does this all mean? How does an engineer jump from 35 to 60 LPA?
Well, it looks like we have to factor in a complex matrix of location, the archetype of the hiring company, and a very specific set of technical multipliers.
Let's talk about location first, because geography is the most immediate filter, right? where an engineer is physically located still heavily dictates their market value.
It does. Bangalore remains the undisputed leader in volume and top-end compensation.
Which isn't too surprising.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
The sources attribute this to the immense concentration of Global Capability Centers, GCCs, and Tier 1 product companies.
Right.
When an engineer in Bangalore hits that senior level, they're often managing global infrastructure for multinational corporations.
Which completely justifies that 35-plus LPA baseline.
Exactly.
Then you have a city like Mumbai, which provides a really interesting contrast in the data.
Mumbai is fascinating here.
Yeah, the data shows Mumbai is this massive, specialized hub for MLOps roles tied directly to finance, banking, and risk management.
And that makes total sense when you think about the underlying mechanics.
Right, because a bank in Mumbai isn't just running a casual recommendation algorithm for movies.
No, they're running real-time fraud detection models.
And if an MLOps engineer can optimize a pipeline to reduce the latency of a fraud prediction model by just like 50 milliseconds?
That could save the bank tens of millions of rupees in fraudulent transactions every single day.
The stakes are wildly different.
The cost of failure in a financial environment fundamentally alters the salary band.
What about other cities?
Well, Hyderabad, Pune, and Delhi NCR also show strong, maturing ecosystems, generally hovering around that 20 to 30 LPA mark for seniors. But as the data indicates, the city is just one variable. The employer's company archetype is equally critical to the compensation structure.
Right. The sources categorize these employers pretty distinctly. Startups, for instance, they play a very different game.
Oh, completely different.
They often offer a lower fixed cash component, but compensate with equity or ESOPs.
Because the draw there isn't immediate wealth.
Right. It's the opportunity to touch every single part of the infrastructure. You aren't just a cog in the machine. You are literally building the machine from scratch.
Exactly. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have traditional IT services firms.
Right. They operate on rigid, highly structured salary bands dictated by years of experience and client billability.
But if maximizing immediate cash compensation is the goal, the sources clearly point toward product companies and those global capability centers.
Because they operate with massive margins.
Yeah. And they view specialized tech talent as a core revenue driver, not a cost center. They're the ones paying the absolute premium for a battle-tested, production-level experience.
Okay, so I have to push back on this whole landscape, though.
All right, go for it.
Looking at the broader data in these sources, there is a massive amount of salary overlap between adjacent roles.
Sure.
Data scientists are pulling in up to 28-plus LPA. Standard DevOps engineers are hitting 25-plus.
Yeah, the bands are close.
So since the foundational skills seem so similar, why couldn't a standard, highly experienced DevOps engineer just, you know, creatively rewrite their resume, rebrand themselves as an MLOps engineer, and instantly demand a 10 lakh pay bump?
I mean,
like, what is stopping that from happening?
It is a logical question, but it severely underestimates the technical chasm between traditional DevOps and MLOps.
Really? A chasm?
Oh, yeah. In 2026, hiring managers are exceptionally good at spotting a rebranded resume within the first 5 minutes of a technical interview.
Okay, let's look at the actual mechanics of that gap.
Yes, a traditional DevOps engineer knows cloud platforms.
Right.
They know AWS, Azure, GCP.
Right.
They know how to use Docker to containerize an application. And they know Kubernetes to orchestrate those containers.
Sure.
But a traditional web application is largely stateless and consumes predictable amounts of CPU and memory.
Right, whereas a machine learning model is an entirely different beast.
Completely different.
If you try to deploy a massive deep learning model using the exact same Kubernetes configurations you use for a standard microservice, you are going to crash the cluster.
Instantly. The MLOps engineer has to understand how ML frameworks like TensorFlow or PyTorch actually execute computations on a hardware level.
Oh, like managing GPU memory allocation.
Exactly, which is notoriously difficult in a containerized environment.
And furthermore, the CI/CD pipeline, continuous integration, and continuous deployment operates on completely different logic, right?
Yeah. In traditional DevOps, CI/CD is triggered when a developer pushes new code. You run unit tests, you build the image, you deploy.
Simple enough.
But in MLOps, deployment is often triggered not by new code, but by new data.
Ah.
If the system detects that model drift we talked about earlier, the pipeline must automatically fetch a new data set, spin up massive compute clusters to retrain the model, run validation tests to ensure the new model is actually better than the old one, and then deploy it seamlessly.
That is wild. A standard DevOps engineer has zero context for managing data pipelines or model versioning registries like MLflow or automated model retraining loops.
Not at all.
So here's where it gets really interesting, because even if you master everything you just described, that only gets you to the 35 LPA ceiling.
Right. That's just the baseline for senior.
The sources are definitive on this. That massive 60-plus LPA tier is exclusively reserved for professionals who have mastered generative AI infrastructure.
And what's fascinating here is how rapidly the requirements have scaled. Generative AI fundamentally rewrote the infrastructure rulebook.
How so?
Well, we are no longer talking about deploying a random forest model that takes up, like, 50 megabytes of memory.
Right.
We are talking about serving large language models that require hundreds of gigabytes of VRAM just to load the weights.
Let's break down the mechanics of why GenAI is so difficult to manage in production, because it explains the salary premium perfectly.
Yeah, it really does.
A lot of companies right now are building retrieval augmented generation systems, or RA.
Very popular right now.
The idea is that you don't just ask an LLM a question. You first search your company's private database for relevant documents, and you feed those documents to the LLM so it can generate an accurate, customized answer.
Exactly.
But to do that at scale, you have to use vector databases.
And vector databases are not simple SQL tables.
Right.
They store data as high-dimensional mathematical vectors to enable semantic search.
Exactly. Wait, moving past just the definition, the real challenge is keeping that database synchronized.
Oh, absolutely.
If an enterprise updates its HR policies, the MLOps engineer has to ensure that the data pipeline immediately re-embeds the new documents, updates the vector database, and invalidates the old cache, all while the LLM is serving thousands of user queries a minute.
It's a massive orchestration effort.
If the retrieval pipeline breaks, the LLM starts hallucinating or giving outdated information.
And the latency requirements are brutal. You have to retrieve the vectors, format the prompt, run it through a massive neural network, and stream the response back to the user in under 2 seconds.
That is insane. So the professionals who can orchestrate that delicate dance of vector databases, GPU sharding for massive LLMs, and real-time inference optimization are just scarce.
Incredibly scarce. That is why companies are willing to pay 60 LPA or more.
They are buying the capability to actually leverage generative AI in a commercial setting without the system collapsing under its own weight.
Obviously.
Knowing that this high-level Gen AI orchestration is the key to the top tier, it brings up a very pragmatic question for you, the listener. How do you actually prove to an employer that you possess these skills? Because the instinct for a lot of people is to go out, study for a multiple choice cloud architecture exam, and just collect certificates.
And relying solely on certifications is one of the most common and, frankly, most detrimental career mistakes outlined in the current data.
Okay, let's unpack this. It makes sense when you think about it. Earning an advanced AWS or Kubernetes certificate is a lot like passing a highly advanced flight simulator.
That's a great analogy.
Right. It proves you understand the physics of flying, you know where all the dials are, and you can follow the checklist when everything goes according to the script.
But no major airline is going to let you fly a commercial jet carrying 300 passengers just because you beat the simulator.
Exactly. They want to know if you can safely land the plane when you lose an engine in the middle of a thunderstorm.
Because the real world is messy, unpredictable, and entirely unscripted.
The sources offer a very explicit golden formula for this. They say it's certification plus practical projects plus production skills.
The certificates are merely the baseline vocabulary. They get your resume past the automated HR filters.
But in the technical interview, the hiring managers are going to probe your production scars.
Oh, they want to hear about the time the system crashed.
Precisely. They will ask how you debugged a memory leak in a PyTorch container that only happened under peak load.
Right. They want to know your strategy for rolling back a corrupted model weights file across a distributed cluster with zero downtime.
And you cannot answer those questions by reading a textbook.
No, you only learn those answers by building, breaking, and fixing actual systems.
The sources highlight a really nuanced point about how we measure experience in this field, too. We tend to view experience purely as a metric of time, like 5 years on a resume equals a senior title.
Yeah, that's the traditional way.
But the data shows two engineers can both have exactly 5 years of experience, and their market value will be astronomically different based entirely on the quality and depth of that time.
Consider Engineer A. For 5 years, they have been tasked with manually triggering deployment scripts monitoring basic CPU usage dashboards, and filing support tickets when a model fails.
Okay.
They have 5 years of experience, but it is shallow. They are reacting to the infrastructure.
Contrast that with Engineer B. Over those same 5 years, they automated the deployment scripts using CI/CD pipelines. They implemented MLflow to track model registry versions automatically.
A huge step up.
Right. They migrated the infrastructure to a Kubernetes cluster that auto-scales based on incoming traffic, and they recently integrated a vector database for a new GenAI feature.
Engineer B hasn't just maintained the infrastructure, they have architected it.
And the market aggressively compensates Engineer B.
Naturally.
The career trajectory in MLOps is a direct progression from dependence to architectural independence.
You typically start in a junior role handling basic pipeline maintenance and monitoring.
And as you progress, you take ownership of the end-to-end CI/CD processes.
Ultimately, you step into the role of an ML platform architect or GenAI infrastructure engineer, where your primary job is designing the foundational systems that allow the data science teams to operate efficiently.
Now, this intense demand for production-hardened architects isn't happening in a vacuum.
No, it's a direct reaction to a massive macroeconomic shift happening in the industry right now in 2026.
The sources identify this as the most critical trend of the year, the end of the AI sandbox.
For the past few years, enterprises were heavily focused on experimentation.
Just seeing what stuck.
Yeah, the mandate was simply to see if AI could provide value. Data scientists were given massive budgets to build proofs of concept in isolated, controlled environments.
But a proof of concept doesn't generate revenue.
No, it doesn't.
Now, the boards of directors are demanding a return on their AI investments. They want those sandbox models integrated into the core customer-facing applications.
The mandate has shifted entirely from experimentation to enterprise-scale deployment.
And that transition is brutal if you do not have the right infrastructure talent.
Oh, it's a nightmare. Scaling a model from a controlled environment with 100 internal users to a live environment with 10 million external users exposes every single flaw in your architecture.
The memory bottlenecks, the latency issues, the data drift, they all multiply exponentially.
Which naturally leads us to the final and perhaps most critical puzzle piece highlighted in our sources, AI governance.
Right, because when you scale these systems to millions of users, the risk profile changes entirely.
This raises an important question regarding liability. If an enterprise AI system makes an autonomous decision, who is responsible for the outcome?
Let's look at a concrete example from the sources. Imagine a major financial institution uses a highly complex machine learning model to approve or deny small business loans.
Okay, pretty common scenario.
A business owner gets denied, and they sue the bank, claiming the AI algorithm was fundamentally biased against their demographic.
Right.
5 years ago, the bank might have struggled to explain the AI's decision. But in 2026, regulators and auditors will show up and demand a full accounting of that specific decision.
And this is where MLOps evolves from a purely technical engineering function into a critical pillar of enterprise risk management.
It's fascinating.
In that scenario, the MLOps engineer must be able to pull the exact digital paper trail.
Right.
They have to prove exactly which version of the model was running on the day the loan was denied. They have to trace that model back to the exact snapshot of the training data used to build it, proving that the data was compliant and unbiased.
And if the infrastructure isn't designed to capture and log all that metadata automatically, if there is no robust model registry or data provenance tracking, the company is exposed to massive legal liability and reputational damage.
Absolutely.
MLOps is no longer just about keeping the servers from catching fire. It is about ensuring the AI systems are secure, legally compliant, fully traceable, and ethically responsible at scale.
And that level of risk mitigation is exactly why the top tier of talent commands well over 60 LPA. They aren't just building tech, they are protecting the enterprise.
When you synthesize all of this data, the narrative is remarkably consistent.
It really is.
The barrier to entry for building a basic AI model has never been lower. Anyone can pull an open source model off the internet and run it on their laptop.
Sure.
But the barrier to deploying, scaling, governing, and maintaining that model in a high-stakes commercial environment has never been higher.
Exactly.
So, bringing this all together for you, the core takeaway from our deep dives today is that an MLOps career in India in 2026 is incredibly lucrative, stretching from that 6 LPA fresher baseline to the massive 60-plus LPA heights of GenAI architecture.
But that compensation is completely decoupled from simply holding a certification or counting the years on your resume.
Right. Your value is directly dictated by the depth of your production experience. If you want to command the top tier of this market, you have to stop thinking about isolated tools and start focusing on how to build, scale, and monitor complex, resilient systems that you can thoroughly explain and defend in a technical interview.
The shift is fundamentally about moving from an operational mindset to an architectural one. You have to anticipate how the system will fail under pressure and design the automation to prevent it.
But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final unscripted thought to mull over. Something the data implies but doesn't explicitly state.
Okay, what is it?
Consider the ultimate paradox of this career. The entire foundational goal of MLOps is automation.
Right.
You are building systems to automate the deployment, the monitoring, the scaling, and the retraining of artificial intelligence. But as large language models and autonomous AI agents become exponentially more sophisticated in their reasoning capabilities, at what point does the AI become capable of monitoring and managing its own cloud infrastructure?
Oh, wow. That's a profound thought.
Will the ultimate metric of success for a brilliant MLOps engineer be building a system so autonomous, so perfectly self-governing, that they entirely automate themselves out of a job?
I mean, the history of computer science is a history of abstracting away the lower levels of complexity.
Right.
It is a very real possibility that the role will simply evolve to govern the agents governing the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely something to think about while you're architecting those next generation pipelines. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the sources. Keep exploring the data, keep building resilient systems, and we'll catch you next time.